You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Behind Enemy Lines. I'm your host, Alejandro Zuniga, from the Michigan Insider, Michigan.247sports.com. Turning our attention this week to the Rutgers Scarlet Knights as Michigan football finally begins its Big Ten schedule and, quite honestly, finally faces an opponent that there's interesting pieces to talk about and potentially a more competitive game coming up this weekend. Excited to have a guest with me, as always. And this week, we've got Bobby Darin. He is the publisher of Scarlet Nation, our affiliate over on 247 Sports. Bobby's joining me here to talk about this noon kickoff on the Big Ten Network, Michigan and Rutgers, two undefeated teams. And Rutgers, honestly, has put together a really impressive start to the 2023 season. Not only are they 3-0, but those wins are over a couple Power 5 teams in Northwestern, Virginia Tech, and also Temple. And comfortable looking wins, too. Not ones that were particularly close at the end of the game. Then again, Rutgers was 3-0 through non-conference play last year and then began Big Ten play and finished 4-8. Certainly, the games they've played and the way they've won the games this year maybe have raised expectations a bit. But Bobby, take me through what the first 3 weeks of the season have been, and is there the hope that maybe 4-8 isn't on the table this year for Rutgers?
Yeah, there's a lot more hope because of you spoke about it, the way they won it. It was much more convincing. They played better opponents. Now, look, Virginia Tech's not what Virginia Tech used to be, but, you know, going into those games, Rutgers handled them, did things that they were supposed to do, score when they were supposed to score. When other teams threatened to come back, you know, they kind of put their foot on their necks. And those are things that didn't happen in the past. And you're starting to see this rebuild start to take shape, but it still is a rebuild. Greg Schiano took over a program that, you know, was really down. There was really a dearth of talent. So, you know, it was baby steps, and you're starting to see them move forward a little bit. And it's it's much more promising. There is more excitement. You know, everybody's kind of realistic fan wise when you're playing Michigan, but there's hope for the first time that it's not going to be, you know, a lopsided disaster.
Now, Rutgers has honestly played Michigan pretty close over the last few years, and that's something that Jim Harbaugh talked about this week, that players have talked about this week. You know, in 2020, of course, that was a very disappointing season for the Michigan football program, but that game, you know, that was the Cade McNamara origin story at Michigan and a big comeback and a game that was close into overtime, of course. In 21, that game, Michigan took an early lead, but Rutgers stayed close, and that was a one touchdown game at the end. And last year, while the score, of course, is a blowout in Michigan's favor over in Piscataway, that game was close at halftime. In fact, Rutgers may have been winning at halftime, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah.
And it's a step up for Michigan in competition, right? Michigan and fans who are listening well know that the non-conference schedule has not been the strongest that Michigan has played 2 years in a row now. So let's turn our attention to Rutgers, and starting with the most important position on the field for either team is at the quarterback position. Rutgers, Michigan saw Gavin Wimsett last year and that he's kind of officially the starter and starting for the season this year after he took over late in the 2022 season. This is his third year with the program, but he is just 19 years old, right? He is he's still a young guy. He reclassified, enrolled early. So in year three with Gavin Wimsett, where have you seen him take steps? Where does he still need to improve?
Well, he's taken steps in that he's a more confident, more mature player, going through his read better. He's healthy this year. Last year when he played, he had a bad ankle, so you didn't see the full gamut of his running. That's another thing he brings to the table. Without that, it kind of, you know, it limits what he can do in that, you know, kind of a dual threat capacity. But you're starting to see him just kind of evolve as a player. I was still 19 years old, but, you know, was named one of the team captains. So he's really matured, and he still has issues going through reads at times and missing some open guys. But, you know, it's kind of growing pains, but he's managed the game well. He hasn't turned the ball over this year. He's picked up a lot of yards on the ground when needed. And I think you'll see him run quite a bit against Michigan, but you could just see the steps that, you know, he's taken forward, and not the complete product by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, fans and around the Rutgers program are excited because you see that progress.
I think the one thing you mentioned there that jumps out to me, especially after what Wimsett put together last year, was no interceptions, right? Because I know turnovers were a bugaboo for him last year, and certainly in that Michigan game, of course, that was Will Johnson's first start for Michigan, and he had a pick, and then Mike Barrett, the linebacker, he had a couple of them, including a pick six. In watching the tape from last week for Wimsett against Virginia Tech, he went 7 for 16 for just 46 yards, so not fantastic. But, you know, Greg Schiano was talking about in the post game press conference that, you know, the receivers didn't do him a whole lot of favors. There were a couple drops. There were a couple routes that were not run appropriately. There was a deep shot that looked like it could have been a good completion had there not been some uncalled pass interference in my unbiased eyes. And honestly, unbiased eyes, I don't care who wins a Rutgers Virginia Tech game. But when I saw the completions, and maybe this is about the Rutgers passing game as a whole, it looked like there was a lot of short and intermediate, and even not even like intermediate, a lot of short passing game. Is that accurate to say that that's what Michigan should expect out of Wimsett this weekend?
Yeah, I think they'll go that route, but Kirk Soraka always takes shots. He'll take a deep shot here and there too. But, you know, last week wasn't a good showing by the receivers, and three drops, a few missed routes, that they ran the wrong way. So, last week, it was just kind of they were content with running. And you know he had a big day running the football as well. So didn't really need to keep throwing the ball. Now, that's not going to be the case as the season continues, because the kind of MO for the early part of the season has been get on the board, establish an early lead, run the ball, and let your defense just continue to hold the opponent in check. Now, obviously, with Michigan being such an upgrade, I think it's going to be difficult to do that, because, you know, that defensive line is going to be really tough for the Rutgers offensive line to contend with. So I think they're going to have to open it up and start throwing the ball, because I'm not sure that ground game is going to be, you know, even close to as effective as it was the past few weeks. So you could see, you know, a lot of those short intermediate routes, but don't be surprised if they do mix in some shots here and there.
So through three games this year, Gavin Wimsett, 28 carries, 144 yards, two touchdowns, had a couple nice runs against Virginia Tech, as you mentioned, and has only taken one sack this year, which, you know, that's a product of the offensive line. It's a product of the quarterback. Sacks are very much a quarterback stat, and certainly a product of the game plan that Rutgers has built around him. But as you've touched on a couple times already, Bobby, the running game for Rutgers has been really what's been most impressive, at least from an offensive standpoint, through 3 weeks. And last week, particularly, Rutgers comes into this game with the reigning Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year in running back Kyle Manutengai. He's been impressive. And he had a run against Virginia Tech that reminded me a lot of a Blake Corum run last year in Big Ten play. I think it was against Maryland in the opener, where it's a dive. You know, it's a dive on third or fourth and short, and Manutengai just saw that there was no edge set and just bounced it outside and took it for a big gain. You know, Kyle Manutengai was not necessarily supposed to be the starter this year, right? I know there have been some injuries in that running back room. So how has he emerged as the starter? How has he emerged as one of the Big Ten's brighter players through 3 weeks?
Well, Sam Brown was supposed to be, you know, penciled in as the starter, took over the spot midseason last year, but got hurt in going over 100 yards in his first start against Indiana, and, you know, had some issues through camp and wasn't ready to go. And Manungai's just kind of been that steady guy. Last year, you know, started 11 games, but, you know, it looked like everything was going to be Sam Brown. And when he wasn't able to go the first game, Manungai just stepped in and you know, they're waning Brown back in. But in the meantime,
you can't really deny what Menungai's been doing. You know, he was the first, you mentioned Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week for Rutgers since 2014, which was Gary Nova won it twice. One of them which was for his performance against Michigan when Rutgers pulled that win off in 2014. So it shows you what a lapse it's been offensively. But he's a very good downhill north-south runner, gets stronger as the game goes on, just kind of a really tough runner, runs really hard. And, you know, Sam Brown has a little more, you know, he's a little bigger, can do a little more things, but you can't deny the production. Menungai's tied for sixth leading rusher in the country. So he's just been a workhorse and just really between the tackles, north-south type of runner. And you saw him bounce that play to the outside. His forte is not speed, but, you know, he's got enough jets to get going if you get in the open field.
Now let's flip our attention to the defense here. Rutgers typically plays a stingy sort of defense, and that's what Jim Harbaugh has said, and that's what the stats back up, at least through three games. And, you know, of course, Northwestern, Virginia Tech are not the offensive juggernauts that you see across the country or across the Big Ten necessarily. But yeah, formidable, at least, you know, that they have scholarship players, they have talent on their team. And through three games, Rutgers defense is allowing 10 points per game, 270 yards per game. Both of those are near the top of the Big Ten through three games. Also, what stands out to me is they're allowing just 2.5 yards per rush, which is quite good. I think that actually is best in the Big Ten right now. I'd have to double check that. And you know, at least one familiar name for Michigan fans, and certainly if you're listening to this podcast and follow 24/7 and care about recruiting, Aaron Lewis, defensive end and edge rusher for the Scarlet Knights, formerly, of course, very briefly a Michigan Wolverine. He was part of that 2020 class, enrolled at Michigan, practiced with Michigan for a bit, and then I think within 6 months it was of being in Ann Arbor, decided to transfer out of the program and move closer to home to be with his mother, who had health issues. And had a chance to catch up with Aaron Lewis at Big Ten Media Days this week. And he's not only, you know, very happy with his decision to be at Rutgers because of, you know, the way it let him spend time with his family, but he's also emerged as a leader on this defense and as a productive player. So Bobby, outside of him, what is it that Rutgers has done so far this year that has been successful, and who are some players that Michigan should watch out for?
Well, you know, you touched on it. They've really stopped the run, and that's been able to do, you know, kind of pin their ears back and come after teams early on. And like you said, they're not offensive juggernauts, but really stopping the run is limited what these teams can do early on, at least. And they're pretty stacked as well. I mean, in terms of Greg Schiano's return, it's the most complete defense they've had at all three levels, because they have some depth now where they can roll guys in on the defensive line. They'll even rotate some linebackers in and out, and they have good corners and safety. So they're pretty equal at all three levels. And you know, it's just a product of Greg building this team. And a lot of the guys are, you know, these third, fourth year guys that he's had for multiple years and he's recruited. So defense was always his forte the first time coming in. You know, that's when he had that resurrection of Rutgers football. It's kind of was just on the strength of the defense. They did have, you know, some good years there with Ray Rice and whatnot, but it was basically a defensive oriented team, and that's what this is. So they want to play good defense and run the football, control the clock. So you know, they're one of the tops in the nation in time of possession, but that's going to get tested as these weeks go on. But yeah, they're just, you know, it's the most complete defense they've had, you know, probably in the last decade, because, you know, the defense, you know, the team after Schiano left, it went downhill. So, you know, like I said, it's baby steps building it back.
Now, when it comes to controlling the ball and controlling the clock, that's, of course, something Michigan likes to do itself. And that turns my attention to what the spread on this game was, right? Which was in the high 20s when it opened. And that honestly surprised me a little bit, given the way that Michigan has underwhelmed a little bit through the first few games of its season. And given that we don't know a whole lot about Michigan because of the level of competition that it's played, I'm not going to sit here and ask you, Bobby, to make a pick on this game, but, you know, as you're watching the game on Saturday, as you're seeing, mm-hmm. you know, Rutgers come into the Big House and face the number two team in the country, what are some keys to the game? What are some things you're going to be watching as the Scarlet Knights try to keep this close and potentially pull off an upset at Michigan Stadium?
Well, if there's any hope of that, they're going to have to get some takeaways and turn the ball over. If it's just going toe to toe with Michigan, you know, the talent gap is just too much. And I mentioned that, you know, that Rutgers offensive line, yes, they've given up one sack. Yes, they've managed some good rushing yards, but it hasn't seen the level of competition or athleticism or size that it's going to see in the trenches. So I expect them to try to run the football, but I'm not expecting the same type of success it had, you know, over the last 3 weeks. So you're going to have to be successful in the passing game. You're going to have to get takeaways, win the turnover battle, and get some special teams play, because, you know, this is a huge upgrade in competition from what they've seen. But, you know, if they can control the ball a little bit and keep the time of possession relatively equal, you know, they could stay within striking distance for a little while. But, you know, you're talking about one of the top teams in the country here. So there's a ways to go before you start talking upset. But I think they could play with them for a while. And you know, if it's that slow paced ground game where you have the defense making some plays, forcing some Michigan field goals, I mean, they're going to have to do all these things to keep it close.
Going to be very excited to be at the Big House this weekend to see it all happen. It's been a pretty consistent theme that opposing coaches ahead of facing Michigan have all pretty much said the same thing, which is that Michigan on paper, it seems, has no glaring weaknesses. But of course, every coach and every team comes in with a game plan to try to attack the cracks that they see. And Bowling Green last week, before, you know, their second string quarterback went down and they were on a walk-on, you know, they had a shot to the end zone that should have been a touchdown. They moved the ball decently well, had a couple of third and fourth and shorts that if they hadn't had a third string quarterback in, maybe they would have gone for, maybe they would have scored. So we'll be just very interested to see a step up for Michigan in competition. Same for Rutgers, and excited to see how Greg Schiano's continued to build that program. Bobby, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of insight into the Scarlet Knights. If you want to follow more content, more previews from the Rutgers side of things, he is over at Scarlet Nation, over on 24/7 Sports. You can follow him there. Bobby, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next year.
All right, thanks for having me, Alejandro. I appreciate it.
We're going to hit a quick break here on Behind Enemy Lines. When we come back, I'll be talking Michigan State and Ohio State. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
And we are back, folks, on the Michigan Insider, michigan.247sports.com. Alejandro Zuniga, still going behind enemy lines, turning our attention now to the Michigan State Spartans, welcoming Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate, part of our 247 Sports Network, to the show. Stephen, when we talked last week, obviously there's a lot going on with the Michigan State football program, but you were pretty much spot on in saying that nobody expected that Mel Tucker would be coaching another football game at Michigan State. At that point, he had just been suspended. In the days since, Michigan State has informed Mel Tucker and informed the world that they intend to fire him for cause. I assume, you know, when we talked last week, you said there was maybe a bit of a silver lining that Michigan State could have a full coaching search in process for determining who Mel Tucker's successor is going to be. I assume just big picture about the situation, which is still going to have a legal process that will unfold. And I know Mel Tucker's, you know, fighting, you know, through his lawyers, some of what's been reported, but I assume the sentiment among the Michigan State community hasn't changed too much in a week that, you know, the program, the university kind of has to move on.
Right. No, yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, now, last time we talked, I think the Michigan State community, you know, people that follow this program and everything, like, we're just sort of emerging from like the initial shock and awe of it and sort of like into like a processing phase now, another week later, even with this news. I mean, yeah, everyone had last week to digest like the facts that Mel Tucker was going to be gone one way or another, sooner or later. So now everyone's kind of turned to what can we get out of this season, you know, like from a fan enjoyment aspect, you know, as selfish as that might seem, like, of course you're worried about the players. I think, you know, at least people should be, but from the dialogue that I have with readers and people that, you know, that I interact with, it's about like, what's fair to expect the rest of the season. And then, you know, like you said, turning to the coaching search, and, you know, everyone's picking out their favorite names right now, and they're going to be watching different teams to see, does my horse, you know, finish the season strong? Is he going to get an interview? What about this guy? Oh, he had a great October, you know, after a little bit of a shaky September. Let's see if this guy can enter the mix, you know. But yeah, I do think from Michigan State's perspective, it's the more time you have, the better, you know, especially compared to last time they had to go through this. You're going to be able to vet and re-vet and triple vet, double back, you know, everything that you would think, at least ideally, if this is done right, that's the way you should be able to do this. And obviously, you know, you hope that they're able to uncover any sort of personal red flags. I'm sure that's going to be top of their priority as they go about this. But yeah, Alan Haller and whoever else he has working with him will have plenty of time to get this right.
Well, we'll certainly dive into that more in the weeks and months to come. A long season ahead. You know, Big Ten season is starting for most teams this weekend, and that includes the Michigan State Spartans, who host Maryland at 3:30. Following what was a rough outing for the Spartans, it was thankfully the game was on Peacock. I think you wrote that in a column that I read, Stephen. But Michigan State hosted Washington in, you know, Washington. Granted, they are one of the more impressive teams that I've seen this year. But that game was 41-7, 35-0 at halftime. And, you know, quite honestly, one of the better and more dominant offensive showings that I've seen from a football team this year. Michael Penix was fantastic. The Huskies put up 713 yards of offense. They averaged 14 yards per drop back. If you pull up kind of the expected points average or expected points added and like all of the advanced analytics from an offensive standpoint, just Washington was thoroughly dominant. Are there any positives to take from that game? I was reading through your post-game grades and they were quite negative. How is your outlook of what the season can look like from a football standpoint changed after the Washington game?
I mean, so 713 yards, I'll point out at the top, that's a program record. Michigan State's never allowed more yards than that in a game. So that's a tough badge, you know, to put on acting head coach Harlan Barnett, who's a proud, you know, MSU alumnus, former player, you know, his first game to have to wear that badge as the guy who gave up more yards than anybody in program history. That's tough. I mean, from a football standpoint, like I was telling people up there in the press box, like, you know, it sounds like a joke, but it's not. I mean, I think the only thing they did well out there was successfully win a challenge. You know, there was a kickoff out of bounds, and they tried to rule it out. You know, they said the kid caught it and ruled it out, you know, walked out at the one or whatever, and they challenged it and said the ball was already out of bounds when he caught it. They won that. Other than that, I mean, no, they got Washington scored at will, you know, which I'm pretty sure I said on here. I haven't been shy about it. I thought Washington was going to handle them. That was about as bad as I thought it could be. You know, I didn't think it'd be good anyway, you slice it, but that was probably the worst case scenario because it was just bombs away over the top repeatedly. I mean, you know, guys were either wide open, which Washington's scheme tends to, you know, facilitate. These guys just, it's a very impressive system that they run because these guys, when they're open, they're the only one on your TV screen, you know, as folks probably saw. They get wide open. And when they weren't, you know, when Michigan State's guys were actually right there in phase and in good coverage with them, they just made great catches. You know, they got a couple pros for sure, maybe more than two playing receivers. So, yeah, in terms of football stuff, no, they could not run the ball. Obviously, the first Power 5 opponent. And there were signs, you know, there were some minor red flags from Central and Richmond that they just didn't really dominate on the ground or even anything close to that. And it was bad against Washington. There was no run game to speak of. The offensive line looked bad. And the offensive line, which you got, has been a weak area for this program for quite a bit now. But the one thing they did do in weeks one and two was protect Noah Kim very, very well. Again, lower level teams, but they didn't do that. You know, Noah Kim was under duress. He got hit more than he ever has. It clearly affected him. He got hit once early on and just he became very skittish in the pocket, which we haven't seen. He's had very clean pockets up until that point. And, you know, he was like the term seeing ghosts. You know, he was evading pressure that really wasn't there. He was freaking out and sort of, you know, scooting out of the pocket and panicking before he had to, even against, you know, 3 and 4 man rushes. So, no, there was not a lot to like there. Now you go into Big Ten play and, you know, technically, it's a new day. It's a new opportunity. I mean, technically, I guess they could run through the East somehow. You know, there's no football evidence or reasons for me to believe that, but that's sort of what they're preaching right now inside to keep everybody locked in. But, you know, as I wrote in that column, like if, you know, it's going to be a dangerous sort of tightrope, I think, for this team and this program, because with every loss, you know, the pressure and just the reality of the situation is going to amp up. Because with every loss, the likelihood that Harlan Barnett or any of these coaches are here next year drops. With every loss, you know, are you going to have to say, every player, I think, that at least, you know, is in the playing group is going to have to look in the mirror and say, what am I getting out of this? What am I doing? And where do I want to go in terms of just next season, whether it's staying here with a new staff, transferring somewhere else, trying to go to the NFL, whatever. So I do think there's a possibility that, well, you know, this is game four. So guys who've played every week, if they play in this game, they might have some decisions to make. Now, we've asked Harlan Barnett multiple times, most recently on Saturday after Washington. He said nobody has communicated any desire to him yet to sit out and shut it down and preserve that year. But, you know, I have to believe if things go south. You know, I think Maryland's a winnable game. I'm not going to necessarily call a Michigan State win right now, but it's a toss-up coin flip sort of win. It is a winnable game for them. Going out to Iowa the next week is going to be tough. And, you know, it only gets harder from there with the other big boys in the East. But I do think there's some potential for it to really go off the rails this year, especially if it does not go well against Maryland, because then it's only going to get harder. It's only going to get worse. And if you're talking about, you know, double digit guys that were to shut it down and sit out, that you would assume those would be some of their best players, right? Because they would be saving themselves for either a portal move or the NFL or whatever. Things could get pretty bad, I think, pretty quickly. So it's really this Maryland game is really, really important, I think, for them to keep everything on the rails for now. But that's going to be week to week.
Well, Stephen, I'll let you go quickly because you talked to us so long last week, number one. And number two, I know your week has been just absolutely jam-packed. That's Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate. You can follow him on Twitter or X at Stephen_M_Brooks. Spartans have Maryland coming up at 3:30 p.m. at home. That'll be followed at Iowa for a night game, their bye week, then at Rutgers, and then, of course, the Michigan game in East Lansing. Stephen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you then.
And we'll close our show, as we always do, with the Ohio State Buckeyes. Joining the show is Patrick Murphy, who covers Ohio State for Bucknuts of 24/7 Sports. Patrick, Ohio State came back to form against Western Kentucky last weekend. They won 63-10 to move to 3-0 on the season. Looking at the box score is looking at a very complete Ohio State offensive performance. Kyle McCord in his first game, not as the starter, but as the starter, right? Trademark, patent pending. Went 19 for 23, 318 yards, three touchdowns. Travion Henderson carried the ball 13 times, 88 yards and two touchdowns. And then receiving, of course, Marvin Harrison Jr. leading the way, 126 yards and a touchdown on five receptions. And Emeka Egbuka found the end zone twice with two receiving touchdowns as well. But then looking at the game on paper, looking at the advanced stats is where this really kind of jumped out to me, is that expected points added per play, Ohio State 99th percentile, success rate 96th percentile, yards per play 98th percentile, explosive play rate 17%, 99th percentile. It seems like reports of Ohio State's offensive demise were greatly exaggerated. Patrick, what did you see in the horseshoe on Saturday?
I think you've recapped it pretty effectively there. The caveat I would add is that Western Kentucky's defense is not very good. And we knew that coming in. I think if you're a Buckeye fan and you were aware of that fact, you wanted to see a performance like this to not be as concerned going into the Notre Dame game. And look, I mean, even in Ohio State losses in recent years, the losses, the back-to-back losses to Michigan, the loss to Georgia, those, you know, even Oregon, the offense hasn't been the issue, right? They've been able to put up points, put up yards in most of those games. So you wanted to at least see that continue, even with the changes on offense with Kyle McCord taking over and the offensive line, all the things we've talked about. And they finally did seem to click. It would have been certainly concerning if they got through this game and it was another 35-7 type of game against what was clearly an overmatched opponent, just because that would be the offense not taking that next step against a team that it certainly should. So that was kind of the way I viewed it. This was what I think a lot of people expected to happen probably last week and this week, the last 2 weeks, I guess I should say. I was a bit more reserved with my score prediction for this game. So of course, this is the game that the offense finds its rhythm, but if you're a Buckeye fan, certainly positive signs going forward with Kyle McCord and the way this offense looks.
Yeah, the Buckeyes scored five touchdowns in a quarter in that game against Western Kentucky, which is that's vintage Ohio State, right? That's kind of what you expect from an offense that has been one of the top offenses, one of the top units in college football these past few seasons. Let's turn our attention to Notre Dame, because this has been the game that's been circled on everyone's calendar, particularly if you are in Columbus or in South Bend. Patrick, just gotta start with this question. What's it like to play a real non-conference game?
That's funny. We talked about that a couple weeks ago when you came on my show. Look, it's going to be exciting. Ohio State's been pretty good about doing these. Obviously, the Notre Dame game was here last season in Columbus. They were scheduled to play Oregon the 2020 and 2021 season. They only got the 2021 season out of it. And they have a handful of these going forward with Texas and Alabama and Georgia down the line. So, look, I think it's important to the sport. And this is not to say anything negative about the way Michigan is scheduled. Each program can do it their own way. And I don't want it to sound that way. But I think just from a fan perspective, you need some of these games early in the season, right? And you know, we've heard about attendances dropping at programs around the country, and you know, the TV product is so good. We need to give reason for people to go out to these games. And I think this is important for the fan perspective. And then from a media perspective, it's fun to cover these big games, especially when you do home and away. I've never been to South Bend. I've never been to Notre Dame Stadium, so I'm excited for that. And then, you know, obviously it's about a 4-hour drive from Columbus, so fans can make the trip. I'm sure they will. And it's just exciting. You know, we saw it a couple weeks ago with Alabama and Texas, right? That was a huge game. I mean, even Colorado State this weekend became a must-watch event that kept me up till 2:30 in the morning. So you need games that people are interested in, not just, you know, tuning on in the fourth quarter when it's interesting on your TV, but I think for the sport to continue the way it's been, games that people want to go to and what will pay money to attend. And, you know, watching Ohio State win by 53 against Western Kentucky is probably fun, but that becomes old after a while, and you need some more of these games on the schedule. Not every week, I don't think, though, with these super conferences, maybe that's what we're going to see but certainly sprinkled in.
I think that's all very valid from both, you know, gauging the temperature of the Michigan fan base and then just myself as doing this for my job. A little bit jealous of Ohio State that they're playing Notre Dame, because that Notre Dame Michigan has historically been such a fun and entertaining rivalry for those two programs, but also because after six straight non-conference games over the last 2 years that have really been games without a pulse, just be nice to feel something, you know. But in terms of the game itself, my perspective and gathering from what you've said, Patrick, is that expectations for the Notre Dame game have probably risen for Ohio State fans, given the way that the offense clicked against Western Kentucky. That being said, there are questions coming into the season for Ohio State that I think are going to be answered, or at least we'll have a first look at answers. One of those being is what's the defense going to look like in year two under Jim Knowles? Notre Dame is a team that when you look at the 24/7 talent composite, you know, they're ranked 11th. You know, Ohio State, I believe, is third. They're certainly in the top five. But this is the first team that Ohio State's facing this year that can go toe to toe with them talent wise. They've certainly looked good offensively. Notre Dame has same sort of things as we've talked about throughout this show, throughout the year, is that Ohio State's offensive line had not looked fantastic, looked a lot better against Western Kentucky. But again, what's that going to look like against a better pass rush? And then Kyle McCord is getting his, you know, first true road start. I mean, Indiana is Indiana, but Notre Dame is, you know, it's a slightly smaller version of the Big House. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. Certainly we'll have a good amount of Ohio State fans, which always travel well, but it's going to be the first big road test in prime time under the lights. Patrick, what are you wanting to see? What are the sort of things you're going to learn about this program, about the Ohio State Buckeyes after Saturday night?
I think when we have this conversation next week, I'll be able to give you a much better sense, win or lose, of kind of what this Ohio State team is. And that's what these games help to do. I'm not going to say it paints a complete picture because you have to play the whole season and obviously things change. But, you know, I think we'll know, okay, is this offense more what we saw the first 2 weeks, or have they really made progress and can do some of the things they did against Western Kentucky that we already talked about? You know, is this defense, because even early last season, people were talking about, okay, Jim Knowles has something going. Then obviously that narrative changed towards the end of the year. I think this will be a good test with Notre Dame bringing in Sam Hartman and with the way that offense has looked and the running games has played well. So we'll get a much better sense of what this team is. I think it was important for Ohio State. We talked about the offensive side, but defensively, Western Kentucky was going to throw the ball around. They were a high-flying passing air raid offense. It was important for Ohio State's secondary to kind of hold their own. And they were able to do that for the most part, 204 passing yards allowed to a team that was averaging, I think, upwards of 400 or around there. So just from a confidence perspective, because Sam Hartman, a better quarterback than Western Kentucky's Austin Reed, they have more weapons, more in the run game. But I think you feel good if you're Ohio State players, Ohio State fans, that, okay, we were able to do this against a pretty good offense. Now the next step is kind of what they were saying is doing it against a Notre Dame team. So that's the big thing for me, is I think we'll just have a better sense of what this Ohio State team is. I think there's a possibility that Ohio State goes in there to Notre Dame Stadium and loses the game, but you come out of it saying, okay, there were positives here that you can build on, especially because this isn't a conference loss and things are still in front of them. Obviously, Buckeye fans want to win. The Buckeyes want to win on the road there. But, you know, if this is a close loss and Ohio State was able to do positive things, we may still be talking positively when we do this next week. So it should be a barometer for what the rest of this season may look like for Ohio State.
Yeah, I think the way Notre Dame has played the early part of the season has certainly set itself well narrative-wise for Ohio State, right? Because even in a close loss, it's a close loss to a team that has looked like a top five team throughout the three or four games it's played. I know they played week zero. Patrick, thank you so much. I know you have a very busy week ahead and safe travels to South Bend. Patrick Murphy, once again, he covers the Buckeyes for Bucknuts. You can follow his work over at 24/7 Sports, or you can follow him on Twitter/X @_Pat_Murphy. Patrick, thank you so much. Enjoy a real game, We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Behind Enemy Lines. For everyone at 24/7 Sports and the Michigan Insider, thank you so much for listening. There's a lot of content over on our site. Check out the Michigan Insider for in-depth previews, for recruiting news, for analysis of the Michigan football team through 3 weeks and heading into the Big Ten season. It's going to be exciting to be at the Big House this weekend. Going to be a flyover, homecoming, and a Big Ten opponent that's going to put up a fight. Hope to see you there.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.